Some days are terrible. You wish that you were dead. And some days are magical, like great banana bread. Someday we'll be friends with the voices in our heads. The voices in our heads.
Oh, hello, everybody. Welcome to The Voices in Our Heads. Congratulations on not killing yourself. I'm so proud of you. You did it. It's summer. Everyone's horny. It's great. If you are in New York City, I have not promoted dates on this ever, but I have two dates to promote. I'm bringing back a show. I used to have a show called Glamour Puss. Oh my God, I miss that show so much. Myself and Wendy Starling, it was great. It was a good show. It's at Zinc Bar, which is a jazz bar in the West Village. They, since the pandemic, have renovated it and it was already gorgeous. But when you go in there, you're in a time warp. It is one of the most beautiful rooms I've ever been in. The owner, Alex, he's incredible. I am co-hosting a show, back at Zinc Bar. It's called Hooch, which is a word that has to do with prohibition in the 1920s. Mm. And it also reminds me of a whore. So I felt like that was fitting. Myself and a comedian, Haley Dersher, who I'm friends with, we are co-hosting it. The first one is Thursday, June 6th. So this Thursday, okay, Zinc Bar, 7 p.m. And then there's another one the following week, Thursday, June 13th, okay, also 7 p.m. We don't have the lineup for the 13th, but the 16th, I could tell you we have Corinne Fisher. Have you heard of her? Casey Balsham, one of the funniest people I've ever known. And there's another comic, I forget who Haley booked, but those are the two that I booked. And then Haley's booking two other ones that are really great. And so tickets are, I think, $12, and they have great cocktails. They have really good coffee. They have a great espresso machine. So go to my Instagram, instagram.com/Christina Hutch. The link in my bio, you will be able to get tickets. I want to sell this baby out. It used to be a 70-seat room. Now it's 50, which is great. And we're also going to have pens on every table with little pieces of paper. And you can write a suggestion. So in the comments, in the comic set, while they're doing their set, they can pull from this bucket and riff on a suggestion that you've written down, which I love. And I love doing new material. I'm going to be doing all new material on these shows, stuff I've never said before out loud. I've said it out loud in my home to Kevin, and he thought it was weird. So, Zinc Bar, Thursday, June 6th. Very excited. Very excited for that show to come back. It's Hooch. Remember that song? Who's got the hooch, baby? Who's got the only sweetest thing?
I don't think so.
What?
No, I don't.
It's a 90s song. What?
The hooch?
Who's got the hooch? Oh, fuck you, Spotify. Don't track me. Oh God, I hate you, Spotify. I don't hate you, but like, don't. Oh no, don't do that to me. Okay. Well, I'm not going to play it.
I'll find it. Let me see.
Because Spotify's a cunt.
90s song.
They keep giving me this message. I can't listen to music until they make me tell them they're allowed to track me, all my movement,
really?
On my phone. So I have to close out the app. And usually,
do you pay for Spotify?
Yeah, I pay for. Yes.
No shit.
And then they're like, "Well, you can always turn the setting off." Well, then don't ask me.
Yeah.
But then I can't listen to music until I do it. That's right. Rude, Spotify.
There is a song here. Love you. That's showing up.
Okay, let's go.
Blur, is that right? Everything.
Yeah, I think so.
Hooch.
Yeah.
Who's got the hooch?
I don't think I've ever seen or heard this.
Who's got the only sweetest thing?
It's playing right now. If you're not wearing headphones, so you can't hear it.
Yeah.
So 90s. Oh, yeah.
Do you know this song?
No.
Wow. Where were you?
I don't know. I don't remember. I've never heard this before, though.
It sounds
so 90s, though.
Yeah. So when we landed on the word hooch, we're looking up 1920s words because Zinc Bar is very. It is.
Yeah.
I want to live there.
Spot. Yeah.
It's so beautiful. It's so authentically 1920s. And Nina Simone used to perform there back in the day. This was before it was Zinc Bar. Anyway. So this is weird, but I've been talking on the podcast the last 2 weeks, maybe three, about being a broke bitch. And a friend of mine, which I wish she didn't do this because I don't think that was very nice, but she sent me a screenshot of a Reddit thread and the title is Christina is back to being broke. And she was like, are you okay? I'm like, don't. And I told her, I was like, I don't, for my own mental health, I don't go on Reddit.
Yeah.
I don't go on Reddit. There was a time that lasted for approximately 4 seconds where I went on Reddit. And the amount of people saying very specific things about me and trying to figure out what's happening in my life. I'm like, this is what the fuck?
Yeah, it rocks your world a little bit.
It's oh yeah, you had a Reddit thread written
about a little. Yeah. Just bit. Some because one of the guys I guess I like DM'd like a winky face to one of the guys who fucked listeners. And then they posted
put
on
a Reddit thread about it.
Yeah, they were just like, "Oh my god, has Mike DM'd anybody else?" And it's like, "Of course I have. Have I DM'd anybody else?
Is he
like,
not a man?
It was like
is
part
he
of
not
the show.
Man? Look at that face. Come on, you can't. You got to be DMing people.
Yeah,
shoot your shot.
Yeah.
It's weird, but I will say, and I'm going to read this, and to the person who wrote this listens to Voices in Our Heads clearly because she says she does.
Right.
I'm not mad at this person, so I don't want that to be weird for her. I'm not going to call you out, but if you are listening, which I'm assuming you are, I don't want you to think I'm mad at you. I'm not mad at you. I was a little pissed at my friend for sending me this because I do a pretty good job of keeping myself. That's just going to distract me. But I saw it and I'm going to read it. But it's really interesting. It's not like where you don't have a life. What the fuck? That's not what I used to think that. That's not what I think anymore because I do give a lot of myself on these shows and I just have for 10 years. So I just keep doing it. You know what I mean? You already ripped the bag open. Just keep the bag open, right? You're not going to reseal it.
It's a bad habit.
Yeah, but yeah. It says Christina is back to being broke. I remember when this podcast started, Christina was broke and used to hide her collection letters from herself. This is a very loyal fan. She is absolutely correct. This week on The Voices in Our Heads, she revealed that she is $110 overdrawn and her credit cards are maxed out, which is not the case anymore, which is very exciting. I honestly don't know what to say. I'm fascinated and kind of saddened by this turn of events, and I'm genuinely grateful that she was willing to share this stuff about her life because I find it enriching to hear about other people's experiences and struggles. I'm just kind of shocked she got herself back to where she started. How? Why? How are you shocked? I'm not. makes you wonder about the patterns people develop and the impermanence of the major events that happen to us. I love that.
Yeah.
Can't take anything for granted, especially financial windfalls. Side note, she still has $400K locked into a house. If we want to get really specific, I checked the LLC agreement. It's $310K, but it is since appreciated. You buy a beach house in 2019 and then that pandemic hits, baby.
Oh, yeah.
She is.
That might be $500K now.
I think so.
Yeah.
Locked in a house that her estranged parents live in. Technically, she could probably get it back, but she's unwilling to kick her parents out, which is sad. They treat her like shit. Go ahead, get your money back, girl. and there's 39 comments on that. I'm not going to read those. But yeah, my friend sent me that screenshot and I was like, ugh, dude, don't fucking send me that shit. But then I read it and I was like, it's not being mean. And look, people can be mean. And if you're mean, that's on you. But I'm really sensitive and I cry a lot, pretty much every day. I haven't cried today yet, but I'm not. Don't worry. We still got so many more hours left. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, the sun is still up.
Yes, it is. It's shining bright. And so that wasn't mean in any way. But when people are mean, oh, God, it just gets to me. I don't think I think it gets to everybody. It's gotten to Corinne. Like it's gotten to I'm trying to think of the people I know with the highest sense of self-esteem. And it's just, I don't know. It's a lot of energy. And then it makes me go, man, if I was someone like Kendall Jenner or Kylie Jenner, everybody has an opinion about her. Kim Kardashian, that's another good one. All those chicks. Everybody has an opinion on them. You are either obsessed with them, which is not good energy, or you hate them, which is awful. And I'm like, that's gotta suck for them. I'm not saying feel bad for the Kardashians, but I am saying that when you are that visible to that many people, that's energy. That you're getting their energy, whether you know it or not. You most likely don't know it because it's all on the energetic plane. And that made me just go, wow, I'm glad I'm not more famous because I don't think I could handle that. I don't think I could, but I can handle it, God, okay? So do it. I watched the show 30 for 30. Have you heard of this?
Yeah, they're the sports documentaries. Yeah,
I knew you knew what that meant.
Of course.
Yeah, I've never heard of it. But I was like, is it 30 people that are 30 years old or something? But there's a show, it's on Netflix. It's called 30 for 30 Broke.
Yeah, how athletes go broke. Yeah.
Bro, I felt so much less stupid after watching the show. Okay, let me give you some stats. By the time they've retired.
Why did you pick this? Why did you watch it?
Because it happened to pop up. And I was feeling real bad about my money. This was 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, shit. And I watched it. And the first thing they all did, these motherfuckers were drafted into the NFL,
yep.
got either hundreds of thousands of dollars or millions of dollars. Mm-hmm. They had never had money before. The first thing they did was buy their parents a house.
Yeah.
The first fucking thing they did. And I was like, that was literally, I had a fat check be deposited into my bank account. 3 days, I wired it to my dad. Now, that's a different situation in that, like, I own half the property. So it wasn't like, it was a little different. And also, these players are dealing with much more money than I was dealing with. But I was really fascinated by that. And then they did the exact same thing I did, just on a bigger level. They wanted a Porsche.
Yep.
They wanted a Benz.
Yep.
It's so exciting. And I feel so, oh boy, I feel bad for them in this way. A lot of times their families would just leech onto them. Mm-hmm. And then they would all have entourages that are 30 people deep. And there were so many talking heads in this documentary because there were so many NFL and NBA players that were broke.
Yep.
And I was like, dude, that sucks. No one told them how to manage their money. And then their family and friends are all fucking piranhas.
Yep.
And this one guy was like, I had an entourage at one point of 30 people deep. We were going to 5-star restaurants. I had to pay for it. I knew 2 people in my 30-person entourage. What the fuck?
Yeah.
But then that made me go, you have no idea all the times I've paid for dinners that no one asked me to. So that's to be fair to everybody around me. No one leached on. Which I can't imagine. That's got to be so heartbreaking. I will say my parents kind of did a little bit, but I was also acting like I had unlimited amount of money. And as were they. And I'm like, yeah, that's crazy. To go from having no money to 6 figures is, you need to be prepared for that. Especially when you're in your 20s. That ego of a 20-something, you're never going to die.
Yeah.
And I love it.
A lot of the guys in broke, I think the landscape of sports is a little different now because I think there's more affluence involved in youth sports.
Mm.
So there are like programs now where I don't think it's as many kids that just come out of like the gutter. That there's still plenty. But it's not the way it was when I was a kid. When I was a kid, basically especially sports with a lot of like black athletes, football and basketball specifically, these guys would come from kind of places that did not have a lot of money.
Yeah.
So for them, getting this first big check is kind of like,
you feel powerful.
Right.
You
immediately start spending it.
Yes. Yeah. And I
sometimes to help. Like sometimes to buy your, like you said, buy some, your parents a house.
Yeah, so your parents don't got to move to Florida because your dad has heart issues and you don't want them in that humidity.
Right.
And they can only afford Florida. Well, guess what, mom and dad? Now you can live in your favorite beach town.
Right.
Like that felt so good to do. That felt, and especially a child of trauma that just wanted to make their parents happy. And that's the only thing I ever really wanted for myself is to make 2 other people happy. It felt like I won Daughter of the Year. It felt like it's every kid who couldn't get their parents' attention's dream, truly. And it felt so good. I'll never forget that day of the signing. We got the keys. I was so proud of myself. They were so happy. You know, I couldn't believe it. They couldn't believe it. Because, you know, I never really asked my parents for money when I was broke. I just kind of put it all on my own shoulders and try to suffer quietly. But, you know, you figure it out. By the time they've been retired for 2 years, 78% of NFL players have gone bankrupt or are under financial stress. Within 5 years of retirement, an estimated 60% of former NBA players are broke. This one dude was like, I've always wanted a Porsche, but I didn't need a Porsche and an Escalade and a tricked out Denali.
Yeah.
I'm like, you had an Escalade and a tricked out Denali? Yep. That's the same thing. Don't get both.
Well, they do this now.
They got an entourage.
Guys that come into the NFL, they now have programs where they try to teach people.
There's
like mentorship programs with old athletes.
Okay,
like
guys that were
like NFL veterans. And I think it might have been Herm Edwards, who was a former coach of the Jets.
Yeah.
He had a saying for the young guys, you can only drive to the stadium in one car at a time. So it's like saying, basically like, don't buy 4 fucking cars.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I get it though. What the second you get that money is a beautiful thing. I try to approach it from this thing of like energetically, you know, there's enough money for everybody. And I know you can easily look around and give me plenty of evidence that there's not. But energetically, that's just how I think about it. And I thought about that back when I was 19 years old and broke off my ass. And so, you know, I got to a place where I was like, oh, shit, I have money now. That's freedom. I could actually go places. I could go to the doctor. That's crazy. Because this is America. You can't go to the doctor unless you have money. Insurance doesn't even matter, really. I mean, yeah. It does, but you still need money.
Makes no difference.
Nope. And so the power you feel, and I bought, like, I think it was so helpful to watch this show because I felt like such a fucking idiot. Because people, when they go broke, I think they're less likely to talk about it. But I'm not ashamed about it. It's just, you know, I was pissed at myself. But watching the show, I was like, oh, this is a human thing. If you are not educated, you're not educated that like stocks earn dividends and you are making money in your sleep. You're just going to spend your money. And this, okay, check this out. People don't realize that these professional athletes go through. I remember a former player explaining that the moment you get drafted, your parents expect you to buy them a house and they're not settling for your standard 3-bedroom family home. They demand to live in a home just as luxurious as yours. I mean, if you raise me well, we'll talk about it, you know, but this gets fucked up. All of which you're financially responsible for, including the exorbitant property taxes each and every year. That blows. Tyron Smith of the Dallas Cowboys stated that when he got drafted, he bought his parents a new home. Not even a few years after owning the home, he receives a call from them telling him they have 2 mortgages out on the home and they can't pay it back. So Tyron pays off the loans and everything is cool. Not so fast. He said about a year later, his parents called him and told him the same thing. They took out another mortgage on the home, which he paid off again. He also stated that after giving his immediate family members close to $1 million in cash, because that's the other thing. When you have money, this is how I am. You want to be generous with it. I want to take my friends out to dinner. I had a friend, it was her birthday, and she, you know, she had money, but she didn't have money to like spend on Alice and Olivia clothes, which if you don't know, it's just it's a fancy clothing store. It's not like Gucci or Louis Vuitton. That shit's a fucking joke. Don't fall for that.
It's the same level as like Anthropology. Right.
It's a little higher. Yeah. Just a little though. Not much, but it's just a little. Like the Meatpacking District. They have a store in the Meatpacking District. Sure. And you know, so does Anthro. But it was her birthday and I just wanted her to feel good. And I'm like, I'm gonna take you shopping. And I took her shopping at Alice and Olivia, and she got all these beautiful things that she loves. And it made me so happy. I love when I can help people or give them a birthday gift like that, where like they feel good and the clothes are really, when you get money and then you start to buy like nicer clothes, you're like, oh, these clothes are more durable. They look nicer. Like, and so you have this standard of quality that you will accept in quotes in your life. And you going below that is like just admitting defeat in some way. And so which is all mental, but that's how people get themselves into this situation. He stated that after giving his immediate family members close to $1 million in cash, that didn't stop them from stalking him and harassing him no matter where he went. I feel so, oh, this poor guy. That's got to be so heartbreaking. He stated he would be on the road during a season and he would get knocks on his hotel door in the middle of the night, his siblings driving several states to hunt him down, asking him for more money.
Jesus.
That is so fucked.
Yeah.
But it happens. And with money, the reason people are weird about it is not people's fault. It's the society. I think most societies in first world countries, they're just consumer driven. And you realize that, like, even in Williamsburg, when I was riding my bike over, there's all these stores of just dumb shit to buy. And I gotta be honest, a really nice embroiled, you know, fucking tea towel for your stove. Like, well, maybe that'll make my kitchen feel better. Maybe it'll make me feel better. You know, like, psychologically, it just seeps into you that buying things is a dopamine hit. So this show really helped me. I'm not going to be talking about my money stuff anymore because I feel weird about the Reddit thread, but which no shade to you, girl. It was not a bad post. I forget that I talk into this mic and people hear it.
Yep. It's an easy thing to forget.
I really forget that. And then when people talk about it online, exactly the things that I said out of my mouth, and I go, what? Mind your own business. That, pick one, Christina. Fucking pick one. Pick one. So I'm, you know, no shade to you. The last thing I'll say is I had this amazing call with these financial guys that are like help artists build wealth. This is the call I should have had 4 years ago, because he gave me he laid out numbers. He looked at all my statements, my bank statements that had like negative money in them. He looked at all my credit card statements. He looked at what I earn. He goes, honestly, Christina, I know you're freaking out and you feel like it's the end of the world and you don't have any money right now, but I'm actually really excited for you. This is easy. This is how much it's going to take you to get out of debt back to zero. He said, step one, back to zero, no debt. So you're going to have to sit, you're going to have to pinch. And I go, you know what? I got to be honest. Nothing will make you more financially conservative than having $0. You are forced to go, well, what do I want to eat? No, you don't do delivery ever. I don't think I'll ever order delivery again. I will at some point, but you know, that's not in my wheelhouse at the moment. You look in your fridge, you go, I have all this food, eat it. Like, eat what you have. You know what I mean? Like, there's this weird psychology with buying new things, new food, getting food delivered to you that just, I'm off that train because I had to be because I couldn't buy anything. And it was very valuable. It was a very valuable situation to be in for me. I needed to be in that situation. And this call with these finance guys, I was on the phone with them for an hour and they explained to me, we're going to get you down to zero. And then you only got to save a couple G's a month in stocks and in dividends. And if you put this much away a month and you put it in these stock accounts, this is how much you'll have in 5 years. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me? That's crazy. So that call completely changed my headspace.
ETFs? They recommend ETFs?
No, what's that?
ETF is like they're accounts that track the S&P 500.
Oh, so, well, the S&P is one of the most reliable places to invest your money. You get like 8%
return every year.
Yeah.
You can expect that at least.
Right, right. And then, you know.
Vanguard is that's where I have all my like investments.
Nice.
And it works. I've made like a nice chunk after having like 2 years in there.
That's great.
You just sit it.
It's more than a high yield.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. But that's the thing. These guys, these young guys that like get this money when they're athletes or whatever, you know.
You just think it's not going to go away.
You just got, compound interest. A lot of times you can just make money by leaving it in the right account.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And they're like, we're going to set you up with a tax account so right. that every time you get paid, a couple grand goes into this tax account so that when tax season comes, you're not like, huh?
Yeah.
And then that's going to gain interest. So you keep the interest, you know, all that stuff. And then the ball is rolling on getting money out of the house. Either taking a mortgage out, or you know, seeing if my brother wants to buy me out. But I had a call with a lawyer today who formed our LLC, and she was like, "So the way that it breaks down, I don't own 50% of the LLC. I own like 47%, and every decision that's made has to be majority, not unanimous, but majority. So two people have to okay it. Meaning, if I want to take a mortgage out against the house, mom and dad have to okay it." If my brother wanted to buy me out, I can't see that being a problem in their eyes. But if I'm putting the cart before the horse a little bit, but I'm like, man, if they have a chance to hold something over my head, they will.
Oh no.
Because, you know, you give your daughter all the gifts she ever gave you back to her. There's some ill feelings there.
Right.
And hey, ditto, baby. But I'm working on myself and I hope you are too. I will say if I go to them and say, hey, I need to take this money out because I can't technically kick them out of the house. I would never do that no matter how much, no matter what, whatever they throw at me. I'm not going to do that because that goes against my own moral compass. But that might be a tricky crossroads, you know, we'll see. I went with somebody because it was their birthday to Atlantic City. They want to go to Atlantic City to gamble. And I was like, look, I don't have any money, but I will go with you and I'll be very fun. And they gave me $50, turned it into $300.
Nice.
Blackjack, baby.
Don't get used to that.
No, I know. Oh, I know. I'm like, damn, that's a better investment than Bitcoin.
No, it's
says
not.
The dumbest person ever. I was playing blackjack. He gave me $50 and I was like, all right, I'll just see. But I was secretly, I was like, fuck, I just should pocket this. But I've gotten paid since, so it's all good.
Was this a Friday or Saturday night in AC?
No, it was like a Wednesday. It was off night.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. It was great.
That's nice.
And we played blackjack and I turned the 50 into 100 and I was like, cool. And I'm like, all right, I'm out. That's pretty cool. Doubling your money. I'll take it. And then he went to play poker, at this other casino we went to. So I took the 100 and I said, okay, I will play with $20 of this $100 so that whatever happens, I'm going to walk away with a profit. And I turned that $20 into into 200. So that was pretty cool. I will say, I do get why people are gambling addicts. And I don't need another thing to be an addict.
It's the fever.
It is, but I was really, it felt so good. And the person I was with said this too, because he was playing poker and he loves poker. And he bowed out at the right time. And he was like, wow, it feels really good to know that I have self-control over something. And I'm like, yeah, honestly, me too. I'm very proud of myself. Because at one point I was up 500. And then when I was only up 300, I was like, yeah, we're good. We're good. We are good. And then this guy at the table I was at, he was a dealer on another nearby casino. And I was like, what's the craziest thing you've ever seen? And he was like, I saw Kevin Hart lose $450,000 once. And I was like, damn, that's pennies to him. But damn, that's a bummer. That's a bummer. Did you guys know there's a mega penguin? Well, there's not anymore, but there used to be. It's an extinct species of penguin. It was recently thought to have been approximately the size of this is a bunch of Latin words, which would mean it was somewhat larger than the modern emperor penguin. But a new study shows, and this is according to fossils that were recovered, it was in fact almost twice as tall, earning the nickname mega penguin. Its maximum height was estimated to be up to 6'6". Do you date me, mega penguin? What? And a maximum body mass of up to 256 pounds. I want a penguin boyfriend. They don't exist anymore, but can we resurrect them? Can we do Jurassic Park, but for mega penguins? They're not going to hurt anybody. It's a penguin. You know, they're in love. They're monogamous. They're not going to fuck shit up. They have a good head on their shoulders. Also, I learned, just random facts here, Disco Inferno in Latin translates to, do you know what it translates to?
How could I?
Do you have a guess?
No, I don't.
I learned through suffering.
Oh, that's the English. So it's Latin back to English.
Yes. Disco in Latin and Inferno in Latin. Disco Inferno in Latin. That's Latin words, apparently.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah. I learned through suffering. Kind of makes you sing the song a little different, right?
Wow. I didn't know that Disco Inferno.
I was blown
Inferno,
away by it,
those
too.
Are Latin words? I had no idea.
Yeah, man. It's crazy. Oh, okay. You know what time it is? It's time for some fuckboy theater.
Here.
No, I can't. I can't hear the music because I don't have headphones because my hair's too gorgeous to compromise. So tell me when the music is over, Michael, or you could just fade it out now because we're good. It's almost over. He wants to play the rest of the song. That's okay. I understand. You're the boss. Are we good? Okay, guys, welcome to Disco Inferno. Welcome to Fuckboy Theater. Same fucking thing. That's the motto, certainly, for George, who I will read this conversation with a beautiful woman who's perfect and angelic and good with her finances and a piece of trash named George, okay? Okay, this is a dating app. And then George starts off the conversation after they match with, hey, beautiful girl. That picture of you holding a dog is just beautiful. LOL, thank you. It's a goat. Okay, next one. This was a longer conversation. This is a very long one. And a lot of spelling errors. There's a lot of spelling errors in this conversation. So I'm going to try to do my best, you know, with the spelling errors. We're gonna enter into the middle of a conversation between a beautiful angel of a woman and some absolute asshole cunt face named DG, just two initials. Okay. So she says, this is in the middle of the conversation. Really? LOL. I think it's weird. No, that is so fucking hot. There is a few poor girls like that and I love them. So sexy. Haha, nice. If I showed you my cock, would you get mad? Like, you don't gotta send anything back. I just want to see what you say. You don't have to. I'm no good at that stuff. I just wanna, LOL. Why? I told you, babe, to see what you think. I'm not gonna tell you what I think. And then he shows a picture of his dick. He shows you a picture of his dick. It's big. But
you have
cares?
The picture?
Yeah, it's right here.
That's like a fat one.
Yeah, it's a fatty. It's a fatty.
That's ugly looking though, isn't it?
It is. It is. He's like choking it. It's not great. But either way, if you send me a picture of your dick, doesn't matter how big it is, how beautiful it is, it doesn't matter, because if I don't want to see it, now you're rapey. Okay. And then this piece of crap says, sad face. Guess that's not fair, LOL. It's fair. I didn't solicit your dick pic. You insisted and said preemptively that I'm not required to send one back. You just wanted to see what I would say. Again, I insisted it wasn't necessary. And then she took a screenshot because she's sending this to me. Okay, yes, I'm aware. I was asking if it is fair for you to pick something to send, sweetie. And I said no. I mean, you saved my cock to chat, so must not hate it. They're on Snapchat. I never said I did hate it. Do you like it? Be honest with me. Come on. Give me more than sure. She didn't say sure, but maybe she didn't. She didn't send me that. I'm not trying to date you or anything. Oh, thank God. And I just want to chat and have fun. Do you like chatting as well? But you don't have to be so rigid. He meant to say rigid, but he spelt it R-I-D-G-E-D. Now look, can I spell? Boy. Can I spell?
No,
I can't. No. Can't spell. No. But will I risk a typo when I'm sexting? No. I look up the word that I want to say, double check, you know, can't hurt. But he says, I do like chatting as well, but you don't have to be so rigid. Anyway, I was saying for you to pick, you were comfy. Pick a pic you're comfy sending. Aaron, you've taken like 5 screenshots, LOL. It's all to send these photos to me. And you're not answering anything I'm saying. Yeah, you're making me laugh. I want to memorialize it. You're laughing at me? Apparently I'm rigid. She spelled it right. Crying laughing face emoji, shrug emoji, and you're fucking pushy. I'm not even trying to be pushy. That doesn't matter. And rigged isn't an insult, is it? He again spelled it R-I-D-G-E-T. I'm not insulted. I don't even know you. Okay. And scene. Guys, what's happening? What's happening to the world? You know, I need a palate cleanser before I read a little bit of this little self-help book. This is a zine. I don't know if you guys know what zines are. They're from the 90s, but they definitely come back. George Carlin is one of the most prolific stand-up comedians in the world. He has passed away. Oh, God, if I was a fucking medium, I'd try to talk to him and be like, can you help me with this joke? He has since passed away, but he came out with this book that kind of looks like a really fancy magazine or a zine. Sometimes a little brain damage can help. And I just love this. I keep it hanging up on my refrigerator. I found it in a thrift store in Minnesota when Corinne and I were on tour. And it's just random shit. Just random. This is the picture of it. And it's just random things. Did
he published it?
Yes. He wrote it. He published it. I love like listicles and shit. So I'm working on a project that I'm really excited about. It's a book called Congrats on Not Killing Yourself. And so I have it in 3 acts, this book, and the last third of the book, I want it to be like a just fun, just pure fun. And this is my inspiration for it. He wrote this one page. This is a page called People I Can Do Without by George Carlin. Oh, God, I miss him. I wish he was around. I wish he was around to comment on all the shit. I really do. People I can do without. Guy's name Skip. People who ask, are they keeping you busy? People whose kids' names all start with the same initial. A man with fresh blood on his shoes. Anyone with a charge account at an ammo shop. Guys who call themselves yours truly. A waiter with a high fever. A man with 7 gold teeth who wants to play cards. Guys who shake your hand every time they see you. A gynecologist who breathes heavily through his mouth. Anyone who sleeps in a fireplace. People who say God rest his soul when mentioning a dead person, an insurance salesman wearing nose studs, a crying woman who is holding a sword, guys whose eyeglasses are repaired with scotch tape, people who tell me about their bowel movements, a lawyer who winks a lot, ew, a man with gray hair and black eyebrows, ugh, I hear you, Anyone in a hospital gown driving a steamroller. People who know a lot of prayers by heart. A woman wearing a Foxy Lady t-shirt. That still tracks. A man wearing a Bikini Inspector t-shirt. Still tracks. Cute grandparents. Guys who call me Hoss. Athletes with singing careers. Is there athletes with singing careers? That's terrible. Anyone bleeding from both ears. A brain surgeon with more than 11 tattoos. People who wear their underwear till it begins to hurt. And that's just some of them. But I'm like, that's fucking hilarious. You know why I was thinking about George Carlin? So I'm filming this on Friday. It's coming out on Monday. And I yesterday was at Fox News. Their building is in Manhattan. It has this creepy news corporation sign outside that I'm like, this feels very evil. But my good friend Jimmy Fallon has a show, Saturday Night with Jimmy Fallon. Saturday Night on Fox News with Jimmy Fallon. I think that might be the whole name. And I've done the panel a bunch of times. This is my third time. I loved it. Every time I get less nervous. The first time I did it, I want to shit myself. But it's so special because Jimmy had a podcast 12 years ago called Off the Meter. And he invited me on as a guest when I first started comedy. He was one of the first comics that Corinne and I had met. And he invited me on his podcast. And it was the first ever podcast I've ever done. And I will never forget how nervous I was. I wanted to shit myself. I was so scared. I was shaking. So I'm like, what if I don't have anything to say? And I mean, my, how far I've come, you know? But I was in the Fox News building and I just gotten out of hair and makeup because they do you up. And oh my God, can I just say, every once in a while, it actually happens pretty often for me. I will connect with a person so hard. And I'm like, you're my soulmate friend. You know, I come across a lot of those. And this woman who did my makeup, we bonded in such a deep way on so many very specific topics that I was like, you're like my soul mother. She was older than me. She was beautiful and elegant. And she was British. I loved the way she spoke. And we had a lot of interests in common that are very specific that I love talking about. And so we just had, it was amazing. But then after hair and makeup, you're sitting in the little waiting room, you're getting mic'd up. And then all of a sudden it was breaking news, the Trump verdict's coming out. And I was like, oh shit. And then in the middle of us, like when we were filming, or right before we were filming, they announced the verdict. And I was like, oh shit. I was like, there was helicopters. You could hear the helicopters outside. Yeah. I'm in a fucking 50-story building. I'm like, I'm on the ground floor. But I was like, oh no, are people gonna like trash the place? But I'm like, in New York, that doesn't usually happen. But then I also thought that about DC. You know what I mean?
True.
Yeah, it was just, that is a very interesting piece of history that happened. And I was in a very interesting place for that piece of history to happen. It's just, it was very weird.
Yeah.
It was very strange. And then there's like we were talking, like there was a lot of news anchors that came in the room that, and they're also like, oh God, all the female Fox News anchors are like so cookie cutter hot. It's very so funny. Hot.
Yeah.
They're also, and they're lovely.
Blonde and
lovely people too. Yeah. The guy I did the panel with, what's his name? So handsome. He looked like a Ken doll. And like he was so sweet, like really, really nice people. Also, I will say, every time I go on Jimmy Fallon's Fox show, I get so many Instagram followers. I have not, that's the only place in the last 7 years that I get like a good amount of followers is when I go on Fox News. So that makes me rethink my opinion about the people who watch Fox News. They're loyal. But yeah, that was very interesting. It was just very, very interesting that a president, the sentencing is January 11th, the Republican National, or July. January, yeah. Jesus. July 11th, and then the Republican National Convention, one of the news anchors was like telling me this, I didn't fucking know, is July 13th, something mm-hmm. like that, a little bit after. I'm like, there was a lawyer in the room. They're like, it's possible if he gets sentenced and it's like the judge makes the sentencing, everybody, the entire jury, this is why I was so shocked about it. And everybody at Fox was like, oh, fuck. The entire jury had to unanimously agree that he was guilty on all these counts. So
yeah.
I thought it was going to be a hung jury. And I was just very interested to see what happened. And I could not believe it. Could not believe it. Yeah. And then, you know what I said? Because I said this on the last show. Who's going to love Trump? Someone's got to love him so that he stops doing this shit. And when you read about like his dad and stuff, you're like, man, he didn't have a chance. He didn't have a fucking chance. But he still, and I hate to say this, he talks better than Joe Biden. I mean, he doesn't say anything good. And it's all lies. It's all bullshit because he's a politician. It's just all bullshit. But they played as something that Joe Biden was saying. And like, you could barely hear him. It was like he was stoned or like he was dying. And I'm like, whatever Adderall pill you gave Joe Biden when he delivered the State of the Union speech, he was so present and so erect and so awake. Can you give him that until the election? But then I was like, I mean, what's going to be the difference if Biden wins or Trump wins? What at this point, whatever. I don't know. It's all so exhausting. It's all so exhausting. That's why I love aliens. And that's why I love talking about childhood trauma. Guys, let's get into a little bit from The Mountain Is You by Brianna Wiest. I'm going to read a couple chunks from chapter 5. I did order a new part for my Zoom H6, which is my audio recorder at home. So there's a possibility that the rest of this chapter is up on my patreon.com/Christina Hutchinson. You could sign up for $5 a month if it's in your budget. And if it's not, I absolutely respect that. Don't sign up. But boy, would it be cool if you did. There's a membership level that's just $5. It's just here to listen. And that's where these bonus readings will be. And by the time this podcast comes out, if that bonus reading is up, it will be in the description. And if it's not in the description, that just means it's just going to be up in about a week when I get this replacement part. Okay. Chapter 5 is called Releasing the Past. I would love to do that. Fuck it. You know, fuck the past. The past is in your past and that's your ass's grass. What? I don't know what I'm saying. Okay. I'm going to read this section from chapter 5 called Recovering from Emotional Trauma, just because I feel like maybe some of us could use that. Me. You might think trauma is in your head in the metaphorical sense. It is actually in your body in the literal sense. Thanks, Brianna. Fuck me up. Trauma is what happens when something scares you and you do not get over that fear. That's actually a very simple, succinct way to put trauma. I love that. If you do not resolve or defeat it, you get into it and remain in a sustained state of fight or flight, which is essentially the human panic response for survival. And I mean, guys, if you listen to Guys We Fucked between the years of 2020 and 2021 and 2022, you will hear a girl in active fight or flight interrupting people, just so scared, not knowing what anybody's saying because I was trying to survive. Oops. Sorry, everybody. Trauma is the experience of disconnecting from a fundamental feeling of safety. Unless you are able to reestablish that connection, a particularly destructive bias distorts your world view. You could say that again and tattoo it on my fucking forehead. You become hypersensitive, check, which means you will ascribe intent, overthink, overreact, become triggered by innocuous stimuli, personalize neutral situations. Ugh, that makes people not want to hang out with you. And then none of your friends want to hang out with you. This is my words, not hers. And then you're like, why am I all alone? No one loves me. And then it's like, well, you're a little hard to be around right now, Christina. No one wants to tell you that because they know you're going to freak out. Are they wrong?
No,
they're not. They're not wrong. Okay. You overreact, become triggered by innocuous stimuli, personalized neutral situations, and remain in a mental state of combat mode. I'll fucking say. After experiencing trauma, your brain will rewire itself temporarily to seek out the potential threat in anything, which makes it very difficult to both move on from the initial problem and then not to develop a victim complex. Oh boy, did I ever. After all, your brain is literally trying to show you every imaginable way the world could be out to get you. This is why exposure is so effective as a treatment for fear or anxiety. By gradually reintroducing the stressor into someone's life and showing them that they are able to handle it, the brain is able to return to a neutral state because of the feeling of control and security is being reestablished. That's why if you go to a therapist, a lot of times if you're super traumatized, one of the therapist's first goals is just to establish a safe relationship where you feel safe in their presence. I remember God bless my last therapist. I'm actually getting into therapy again. I'm pretty excited about it. It's time. But the last woman I worked with, she was so lovely. She was a trauma counselor. And she tried to get close to me, not in a overstepping way at all, just establishing like, you know, not judging me and not just being very kind. And I I didn't lash out at her, but I was like, what the fuck's your problem? Like, I was like, ugh, I don't like this because that's not what I was used to. Okay. This is also why people who have stronger social ties and mental resilience prior to a traumatic event, which I didn't have because I had no chance. I was a child, are even more likely to use the event as a catalyst for self-reflection, growth, compassion, and healing as opposed to self-destruction. Well, isn't that fucking nice for you? Good for you. They had multiple ties to that essential feeling of safety. So even if one was eroded or severed, others were still there to support them. What happens to your brain after a traumatic event? Neurologically, we process stress in three parts of our brain. The first is the amygdala. The second is the hippocampus. Ugh, I know all about this shit. And the third is the prefrontal cortex. Individuals suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder have a smaller hippocampus, the center of emotion and memory. Ooh, those are pretty important, huh? To function as an adult in the world. Increased amygdala function, the center of rumination and creativity. That's not fun. The creative part is not rumination. And decreased medial prefrontal anterior cingulate function, the center that governs complex behaviors like planning and self-development. Oh, it becomes clear then why trauma tends to have the following impact on us. Our brains stop processing memory fully, leaving us with fragments of what happened, sometimes contributing to the feeling of disassociation. One of my favorite things. I'm so good at it. Our ability to manage a range of emotions decreases. Abso-goddamn-lutely, if one little thing happens that upsets you, the world is coming to an end. We become stifled and stuck, have trouble planning for the future, and our self-development and actualization come to a halt. When we enter a state of fight or flight, our body literally ceases any advanced function that is not necessary for our survival. I repeat, when we enter a state of fight or flight, which some of y'all walking around permanently in that state, even when you're sleeping, okay? I did it for at least a year, probably 33. The body's main receptors become extremely sensitive and reactive to stimuli. Do they ever. This is a beautiful and essential part of being human. It's kept us alive as a species. However, it is not a state that is meant to be sustained. Centuries ago, when we were at the lower rung of actualization or at the bottom of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, which is very interesting, you should look that up, what concerned us most was physical survival. Yeah, like if you live in a cave with your cave husband and you got a cave baby, then the cave husband goes out to get wood for fire, if fire's invented yet, you and the baby, you're like, I hope a velociraptor doesn't eat us. That's probably not what you're worried about, but you're worried about survival in some way. Today, our focus is primarily on self-actualization and meaningfulness. Thank God. And trying to feel safe through social acceptance, money, or mental acuity. With all of this gray area, it seems obvious that more people would be mentally and emotionally struggling than they did prior, despite having more physical challenges to overcome. Recovery comes down to something very simple, which is restoring the feeling of one's safety. However, the most important part of this restoration, that you must reestablish a feeling of safety in the exact area of life that traumatized you. Can't get a new mom though, Brianna. So what the fuck am I gonna do? Can't get a new dad either. Often, if someone is traumatized by a relationship they had when they were young, ooh, perfect. Glad you're addressing this. They will reinvest that energy into valuing being attractive or successful. Oh, I feel so called out. Oh, I feel so called out. Wait, I'm gonna read that again. That sucks. If someone is traumatized by a relationship they had when they were young, they will reinvest that energy, and trust me, it's a lot of energy, into valuing being attractive or successful, or both. To them, look at my credit card statements. You see a lot of facials, a lot of hot girl shit on there. Because if people don't want to fuck me, who am I? Do you know? To them, they believe that if they are good enough, they can never be denied or rejected again. Wah, wah. Spoiler alert. You still can. And that hurts worse. Because you're like, but I'm so hot. However, we all know this is not how it works. Well, I thought that was how it works, Brianna, but now I know. It actually makes us have unhealthy and destructive attachments to these things. If we are traumatized by a relationship, we restore the feeling of safety by working on other healthy, safe relationships. Now, I got to say, that's why I freaked out that year. And I'm thinking of all the trauma blurbs that people sent me in. And I'm like, dude, we go through a lot, like people around the world, we have a lot of pain circulating in our systems. And there's a lot, there's just a lot of people going through similar things. And even if you're not going through something similar, like a parent thing, you're still fucked up by something. And as Oprah Winfrey said, in that book that I was reading a couple months ago, all pain is the same. I think that is such a beautiful statement because that's something we all have in common. We have buttholes in common. And if you don't, I'm sorry. But that's a medical condition. But we also have pain that lingers in us from whatever it is. And I'm always interested when people say, or I always try to point out when people say, like, I know it wasn't that bad. It doesn't matter. It hurt you. It doesn't matter. Like if someone passes you in the hallway and they're like, nice shirt, and you are hurt by that, yes, it's very easy to say, get the fuck over it. And I could maybe, depending on the day, say, dude, get the fuck over it. Who gives a shit? But no, the reason why you're hurt is not because that person said that. It's something deeper, okay? Feelings aren't facts, but they are clues. So get your treasure maps out, boys and girls and theys and thems, because we're going on an adventure to hunt for your feelings, okay? So if small, in quotes, stuff bothers you, that just means something big bothered you a long time ago and you don't know, either you blacked it out of your memory or you just don't know how to deal with it. And that's okay. That's okay. So when you say, like, well, I wasn't raped as a kid, you don't have to be, being raped as a kid isn't the only terrible, awful thing that can happen to a person. So when you compare, just know, just make a little mental note of that. It doesn't matter, okay? Because you're experiencing pain. That's what matters. You got to figure it out. If we are traumatized by money, I'm not. Yeah, I am. We restore the feeling of safety by doing what we must to ensure we have enough, by saving for an emergency expense. Well, that's what I'm doing, Brianna. Better late than never. If we're traumatized by job loss, oh, and a lot of men are traumatized. I know I was looking up stats a couple of days ago when I was writing, and a lot of men kill themselves, and it's almost always financial. It's almost, and then you go, oh, fuck, you know, a man's identity has been so wrapped up in being a provider, which, like, one person providing for an entire family, that's so much responsibility. Even if it's just in the financial part, it's too much responsibility on that one person. And then if the mom is like, my one responsibility is to raise the kids and put food on the table and clean the house, that's also a lot. That's a lot. You got to share responsibilities, you know? So you don't have the weight of the world on your shoulders, because then you're going to explode and you're going to yell at people and they're going to go, don't want to hang out with her. And then you're going to go, why don't I have any friends? And then you're going to be sad. If we are traumatized by job loss, we restore the feeling of safety by having a backup plan or a side gig in line in case it were to happen again. If we are traumatized by being bullied, I mean, if anybody got bullied, that's so traumatizing. We restore the feeling of safety by finding new friends. What most people try to do is overcompensate in an area of life that is not the real problem. You don't say, Brianna. You don't say. For example, if they struggled in relationships, they hoard money to keep themselves feeling safe. Of course, this is always futile because the problem never gets solved. Your trauma is not in your head. It is literally a changed state in your brain. And the only way you will help your body to return to an actual state is by recreating the feeling of safety that allows you to turn off survival mode and return to normal life. Emotions are physical experiences. We flush our bodies of everything, and regularly so. We defecate, we sweat, we cry. We literally shed our entire skin once a month. Feelings are no different. They are experiences that must likewise be released. Do I want to read anything else from this? I don't want to, 53 minutes? Okay. What it really means to heal your mind. Yeah, I don't want to. Just looking through. Let me just look through real quick. Shut up, I prepped. Stop. Just give me a second. Okay. Ooh, this is a good one. All right, I'm going to read this last section. Moving forward isn't about getting revenge. Well, then what the fuck is it about, Brianna? Your glow up might not be something others can see. But then it doesn't matter. It might not come across as a shift on the surface. In a world of revenge bodies and comeback relationships, a world that tries to tell you that your ultimate transformation should be splayed out on Instagram, your Instagram feed, we've lost what it really means to heal, to improve, and to move on with our lives. Girl, You are wiser than your youth. Damn, girl. That is so true. The real glow up isn't proving the people from your past wrong. Darn it. It is finally feeling so content and hopeful about your future that you stop thinking about them entirely. Ooh, that sounds way better. When you want to change your life so it looks different, and only that, you are still orbiting around the opinions of people who didn't love you and didn't have any intention to. Ouch, that hurts. You can always tell the difference too. People who have truly transformed are not concerned solely with how things appear. That is very true. Oh, that's so true. Their lives are now focused intently on how things feel, how they really are underneath it all. A real glow up is authentic. It is lifting off all the cover-up bullshit and addressing the real problems. And you know what? I actually think I'm finally glowing up. Do you know what I mean? It is healing. It is changing for good. It is, for the first time, prioritizing your heart over someone else's. Aw, that's really, that's beautiful and also sad, but very true. Oh, God damn it. Anyone can piece together an image that looks better. Anyone can edit and filter and lay a picture after picture side by side to create a narrative, a story, a semblance of the whole. Anyone can buy their way into beauty. That is very true. Anyone can look nicer if they really try. Anyone can convince you that they are doing better than they really are. Oof! Ouch, that's hot. If they are so intent on trying to prove that, it is probably because they are still so empty inside. Oh, Jess, punch me in the cunt. What if you weren't worried about whether or not you looked bigger or smaller or nicer or better than you did 10 years ago? What if you were more concerned about whether or not you gained self-respect, real relationships, emotional freedom, mental clarity, a job you appreciate, work you respect, a kinder and more empathetic disposition? Well, that sounds way nicer, doesn't it? And that's fucking free, isn't it? Consumerist America over here. What if your accomplishments were not something you could photograph or measure, nothing you could loosely try to communicate across some pixels and status updates? How are you feeling today? Better than you did yesterday? More whole? More confident? The truth is that there is no before and after in life. We are always in a process of shedding and becoming. That snapshot moment you're waiting for, that instance in which someone dares to look you up again and sees finally that you are thriving, is a game for you and you alone. Bitch, I added that part. Nobody's looking at you the way you think they are. I needed to hear that. Nobody is thinking about you the way you wish they would. Aww. They are looking at themselves. They are thinking about themselves. They are reading themselves. That's so true. This isn't sad. It's freeing. This should be the crux of your ultimate liberation. The truth is that you have nobody to prove wrong but yourself. The people from your past probably didn't disapprove of you nearly as much as you feared they did. I don't know about that one. This closure is for you. This growth is for you. This change is yours. This is you versus you. You meeting you. You seeing you for the first time. This is about you becoming who you know you can be. This is about you finally living up to your potential. But mostly, it is about you recognizing that you were not your best self before. You didn't behave the way you wish you would have. You didn't do what you should have. You weren't what you'd hoped you'd be. Whoever we want, whenever we want desperately to prove someone else wrong, what we are really trying to quell is our own lingering disappointment that we didn't live up to our own expectations. Ouch, bitch. Fucking ouch, bitch. So remember this. The next time you're trying to craft a glow-up story that is compelling to others, ask yourself, why are you still waiting for their approval? The answer, almost always, is that you still do not have your own. I mean, fuck me. You know? Jesus Christ. That was good. I need to hear that. Guys, this podcast is for me, but I'm really glad you enjoy it too. Because if you didn't, we'd get no ads. Guys, if you want to advertise on The Voices in Our Heads, email michaelacoscarelli@gmail.com. Was that the right one? Good for me. Good for me remembering shit. And congratulations on not killing yourself. Follow me on Instagram, instagram.com/Christina Hutch. Come to Zinc Bar Thursday, June 6th, baby. Thursday, June 6th, Zinc Bar. Got a new show that I'm co-hosting with Haley Dersher. It's called Hooch. which is a word from the 1920s that had to deal with prohibition. And it's at 7 p.m. Very excited. We have a great lineup. And I got a lot of new material that I'm very excited to get off my chest. And so I'll see you there, or I'll see you back on here. Either way, have a blessed day.